What's going on, beautiful people? This is Mr. No Excuses and my man Jay.
What's going on? What's going on?
With another episode of the Hidden Truths Podcast, where we provide therapy through conversation, restoring trust and community advocacy, one conversation at a time. What are those skeletons you've been hiding in your closet? What are those uncomfortable conversations that you need to have that may be holding you back from your progress? The more we talk about it, the more we communicate openly and honestly about it, the more we can start trusting each other. The more we start trusting each other, the more we can start building and growing with each other. So that's what we're here to talk about with the Hidden Truths Podcast. Be sure to check us out and subscribe. We're available on all social media platforms and all listening platforms, Hidden Truths Podcast. For this week's community spotlight, we're shouting out a good homeboy of mine, Rick McFadden. He has just opened up in Lincoln County here in North Carolina, a science, technology, engineering, and math academy, a STEM academy for after school and summer school. If you want to check him out, he has the website. It's the letter D dash experience, experience.org. That's D-experience.org. So check out the website. I went and checked out his grand opening yesterday, and it's pretty fly the way he has it set up. He has a building, like I said, out in Lincolnton, and he has it set up to where he's teaching students programming, robotics, music composition, chess, all of the above, all these things that kind of stimulate our creative juices, what it means to actually be an engineer, financial literacy. These are all the things that he's teaching in his program. So be sure to check him out. Very much needed within any community, not just the Black community, but any community for that matter. Science, technology, engineering, and math. That's his program, STEM Academy. The website, d-experience.org. Check him out, the brother Rick McFadden. Tell him Hidden Truth sent you. That was a mouthful.
Sure was.
Goodness gracious, I need a drink after that one.
Hey.
Well, all right. My man, Jay, what's the good word for today, my brother?
So I'll give you a minute to catch your breath from that. Today, we have a topic that sits heavy on my heart because I'm very much into finance. We're going to talk about financial literacy matters. Whew. Take my breath.
Take a deep breath on that one, huh? Mm-hmm.
So today, we're going to talk about how financing contributed to our lifestyle growing up. What does it mean to us now? How do we feel about it? Some of the things we think about, finances. So today, let's start off with a simple talking point.
Well, hold on. Before we get into that, let's introduce our guests.
Oh, that is right. Go ahead, E.
Yeah. So on the phone with us and here in the booth with us, I'll let the ladies go first. Miss Erica, go ahead and introduce yourself, lovely.
Yes, thank you. So it's Erica Nicholson, and I have a company called Slim Waist Fat Pockets, and I am absolutely passionate about all things financial literacy related.
Absolutely, absolutely. Glad you could join us today. Thank you. Because we know you always stay busy, so I'm glad you could pencil us in.
Thank you for having me.
And on the phone, we got my main man, my financial planner, Mr. Terry.
The guru. Cipio,
the guru. Financial guru. Go ahead and introduce yourself, my brother.
Hey, I appreciate that, E, as always, man. Great to be back here on the podcast again. A topic, like Jamie said, that's very near and dear to my heart, financial literacy. My name is Terry Cipio, and I'm representing Charleston, South Carolina, by way of Cipio Financial Group, and just here for the people, man.
Absolutely. For the people, for the culture.
I gotta the last conversation we had with Mr. Terry over here, I have got so many people like, yo, that was fire.
Yeah, so the last one we had him on was Black Christmas.
Black Christmas. Mm.
Yeah.
So we call it Black Christmas because, aka tax season.
Tax season.
Oh, wow.
Dude, I got a lot of people like yo, that was fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, absolutely. So we definitely had to have you back on. Anything money related, financial literacy related, because one of the things that we definitely want to talk about today was, what does money actually mean? And some of the things that we were taught growing up. So Jay, go ahead and indulge us, my brother.
So my first talking point today, and today, when we talk about stuff like this, I don't even go by talking point. I just go by discussions. So we're going to talk about, what some of the things you were taught about money. And I'm not going to say growing up, just period, through your lifetime, now, before, What's some of the things you were taught and was not taught?
Yeah.
Taught.
So, Erica, we'll let you go first.
Ladies. Yeah, ladies first.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. The thing that I heard early on was to find a rich husband. And I was like, that is not a financial plan. And it actually made me very upset and inspired me to learn just about how to manage my own money, because I saw in my mind, if you are depending on somebody else for your financial well-being, then you are at risk. And I didn't think that was a good way for anyone to live their life, much less a woman. So that's what I hear a lot, just in my, I've heard in my family, and I even hear from women
to this day. Like,
yeah.
To this day.
To this day. Yes. They're like, I need to find a rich husband. It's like, hey, how about you learn how to manage your money so that then when you find a husband, you both can become rich together.
Because right. Just because a man or a woman is rich, just because your mate is rich, doesn't mean they know how to manage their money.
All the facts.
Doesn't mean they know how to manage their money. We'll go into that later. I ain't going to preach to them
right
now. Sip, go ahead and spit on it, man. Go ahead and let us know what you done heard about money coming up in your
life. So it's several things that come to my mind about what I didn't learn wasn't taught in my household growing up. And one of the things I think that we all probably heard this from our parents, if you are of a certain age, is, you know, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yep.
And the one thing I would say about that, if you ever listen to Robert Kiyosaki or anybody else about financial matters, is, you know, the one thing that separates people who grow up in poverty and people who doesn't necessarily grow up affluent, but maybe have a better situation than most of the people that grow up in poverty. And that is the expectation that money isn't of this limited resource. In a more affluent family, the message is, you know, the money is coming, or the money is going to be expected to come. Whereas in a poverty-stricken situation, it's, oh, you know, we can't have that. It's all about what we can't do versus changing the mindset to say, what can we do to make it happen? And I think that's so important as we, you know, as we become adults and begin to foster our children and their mindset. And another thing that I'll point out about that is, when it comes to mindset, it was something I was watching on YouTube about this world-renowned psychologist, and he said, you know, the first 7 years of a child's life really dictates the man or the woman. And that's so profound, because he was saying, if you think about all the things that we have to learn to be a functioning member of our family, it's basically things that we see and that we pretty much download just from our parents' behavior and our surroundings. What we take from our surroundings is what we download as children. And throughout those first 7 years, if the message is constantly that money is scarce, money is not, you know, something that we have in abundance, then naturally the child, you know, starts to feel and believe that as well. So we have to change that message and the message that our children are downloading from us in these first 7 years of life, to let the help them understand that money is something that can be in abundance if we go about it the right way.
So was money talked about in your all's household when you were growing up?
Not at all. I mean, you know, money in my household, we had my grandmother who was, you know, who received her Social Security check and an SSI check. And, you know, my uncle, I lived in a blended family, and my uncle, he received his retirement check. And that was basically the cash flow that came in. And my mom, whenever she was working, that was that's what made up the workings of the household. And ironically, that's a lot of what we see today, especially in the African-American community. You got these blended families where if one person moves out or not doesn't necessarily bring in a check that month, then something's going left. And, you know, money is one of those things that's, you know, always talked about in whispers, you know, well, we ain't got this, so we got to do this.
Mm-hmm. Got to pass the collection plate in church tomorrow.
Yes, that's right.
What about you, Erica?
So the messaging I remember hearing was like, put something on it. You know, it was like, You know, like, okay, well, we're going to put a little bit on the light bill. We're going to put a little bit. True. You know, it's serious. But it's so true.
That's so true.
It's so true. And I was like, okay, so why aren't we paying it off completely? But you know, it's like, but you understand, like, as you get older, okay, because they didn't have it to pay it off entirely. That's why. And, you know, everything starts making sense. And then, you know, when you have people passing away, people are saying, oh,
how
are we going to pay for the funeral? It's like, hey, yeah, there's life insurance for that. But
nope, they had no policy.
No. And then people in our community, you know, we're afraid to talk about death. But when it's time when somebody passed away, they're looking at you like, what you got on it? Mm-hmm. You know,
I have to say, I have to cut in for a minute. Thank you, E, for bringing her as a guest. I appreciate it. Love it, man.
Love it. Thank y'all for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What about you, E?
Things I was taught about money. The main thing I was taught.
Or wasn't.
Yeah. I'll start off with what I was taught, which is really one thing, plain and simple. Save money. Yeah. Learn how to save money. And that was it. And you know, other than, you know, getting a job to make money. Mm-hmm. But other than that, credit wasn't talked about. Investment wasn't talked about. And that by no means is any knock on my parents or anyone in my family, because you can only hand down or teach what you know. Looking back on it, I realized a lot of times my parents were essentially kind of living paycheck to paycheck in order mm-hmm. to keep me from knowing the truth of what was going on behind the scenes. It was almost kind of a protection mechanism.
Right.
So the things that I know now as far as how to, you know, make money work for me instead of always mm-hmm. working for money, those were things that I had to learn, but that wasn't talked about in the household. So a lot of times when you look at more affluent communities, they're starting out, you know, even when they come into this world, with a trust account, an mm-hmm. investment account, you know, a strategic plan for how they can continue to contribute to building family wealth.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times in the Black community, we're handed down what? Debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because the house ain't paid off. Mm-hmm. We got to pay for the funeral. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many pieces of debt that get handed down, debt and struggle. So you're already starting a leg behind the race.
Sure, and not just debt. Like, I mean, you know, people put cable bills in their kids' names, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, so instead of not only debt, but then as they get older, they have bad credit because they have things that they didn't even know about that they're seeing on their credit report. You know, it's...
And not to mention that, like, within our circle right here on the podcast, who was taught about credit report,
and those things myself.
Well, in the household, who was anybody taught about that?
You ain't got to me yet. Oh, I'm about to win. I'm just waiting.
So, Jay, what were you taught, man? Or taught or not taught about finances?
So I'm going to start with what I wasn't taught. Credit, how to get a house, finances, loans, savings, checking account, balances.
So all the above.
I was going down the list. It was none of that.
So you weren't taught anything.
I wasn't. Yeah. I was just taught to survive. And mm-hmm. that's not teaching you to be financial literate. It's just teaching you, hey, you do what you got to do. What does that mean?
Because that's mm-hmm. what they knew.
Yeah.
Because that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Yep. But when it comes to the things they were doing, it's funny because if my father had a house, why not teach me? Why not say, hey, mm-hmm. you got to get a loan. You got to go. There's a difference between a conventional loan, an FHA loan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to have this kind of credit score. You can't touch your credit for like 3 months while you're trying. Just the simple things you can just tell somebody. I was never told.
I think what happens a lot of times in the Black community, we feel like we want to wait until the child gets to a certain age to when they're ready to receive certain pieces of information rather than teaching them from day one. You know, this is what credit is. This is what finances are. This is how this, that, and the third works.
Yeah. I think also to add on that, like, you can't know what you don't teach. Just because your father, your mom, whomever has a home doesn't mean that they know how it works, what that process looks like.
It could have been handed down to them.
Yeah. Or even if they went through it, they may not know the difference between the different types of loan. They may not know the difference between like a fixed rate and a variable rate. Or they just don't know it. So they're almost walking into it with no knowledge So they don't feel comfortable sharing it with you because they may not want to feel insecure about the fact that they're not financially literate.
What's funny is that I work in a bank, and you might can agree with me on this, Terry, that that's what happened in 2008. That's why so many homes got foreclosed on.
Right.
Because so many of our people, like we did an analysis of how many black people were caught in the balloon phase of getting balloon loans. And we actually were the majority of people that did it.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not surprised by that because we probably make up the majority of people who lack financial literacy.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you peel back that onion even more, what you'll find, Jamie, if you look at the research about the financial crisis from 08, you'll find that the government and these banks partnered up with several community leaders in the black community. That's typically the pastors in the community, because that's where most African-Americans congregate on Sundays. But the banks had formed relationships with pastors in certain cities and were encouraging people to take out these adjustable rate mortgages and these predatory loans, and actually giving kickbacks, to the church. And it's out there for public knowledge if you just go out there and research it. And I'm not trying to demonize any of the pastors who thought they were doing a good thing, because we're always, nowadays it's taught that, you want to own a home and all that stuff. So of course these pastors thought they were doing the right thing by their parishioners. However, they didn't understand the terms themselves probably in order to better equip their congregation to say, hey, make sure you read this fine print, or make sure that it's a fixed rate loan rather than adjustable rate.
Well, you gotta look at it like this. When it comes to finance, there's one thing that these institutions do. They bank on us not knowing.
Yes.
That's how they make their money. So with a credit card, if a person gets a credit card at 0% interest, they're thinking, oh, I don't have no interest. Mm-hmm. But banks and financial institutes, I don't even want to say betting, they know the majority of people do this are not going to switch that credit card over within them 12, 15 months. Within such gives you an interest rate that they get paid off of. Same thing with the housing thing. When you take a balloon rate for 5 years at, 2%, which is amazing, people don't know that the people that understand how to work these situations say, okay, I'm going to get a balloon rate and then I'm going to refinance when it's time.
Right.
See, but that's the thing. These pastors are probably like, oh, get this so you can get a house, so you can get, some kind of property, but not understanding that there's a process behind everything that our community has not been instilled with.
Well, let's break 100%. That down. Let's break that down. We're talking about financial literacy.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
So financial, we're talking about finance, we're talking about money, we're talking about capitalism. Mm-hmm. But let's look at literacy.
Yeah.
Reading comprehension.
Yep.
That is a huge thing that is lacking in our community. And I see it even in grade school kids right now.
If you want to hide it, you're going to hide it where, E?
In a book.
In a book.
In a book.
In a book. Because our literacy is lacking. So if we don't simply understand how to read and to comprehend, which is unfortunately what you see in a lot of predominantly black churches, is people who lack reading comprehension skills. When you don't understand the words that are in front of you, then you'll just sign your name on anything. Even when I was getting a house, I didn't know exactly what, adjustable mortgage meant, but I knew adjustable meant that shit could change.
Exactly.
Right.
So I don't want that next
year. Right.
I want my shit concrete.
You can take this back?
Right. Right.
But go ahead, Sid. What was you about to say?
But I was going to say, man, at some point, though, another thing in our community that's really unfortunate is the fact that we don't ask enough questions. Because typically it's because of pride. Mm-hmm. And at what point do you set aside your pride and say, hey, you know what? This brother or this sister over here knows this topic. Let me go sit down and talk to him without being shameful about going to get some knowledge.
Well, I'm going to cut in on you right there, Sid, because one of the reasons that we don't ask questions is because from childhood on up, we're taught not to ask questions. If you're a child and you ask an adult a question, what do they say? Stay out of grown folk business.
That's right.
Stay out of grown folk business. Mm-hmm. Don't question no adult. When you're a child in class, a lot of times, you can ask questions, but if it goes against what the teacher is saying, no, you're being disobedient. So we kind of get raised with this sense to kind of dumb down our questioning attitude. Mm-hmm. But questions, to your point, Sip, are how that's one of the main ways we understand information. You can never understand truly what something is or how it works if you don't ask questions. That's the five whys. Who, what, five W's. Who, what, when, where, why, and how, which isn't really a W, but I don't know why they classify it as that. No, but you get my point.
Whiskey. Yeah.
Right. And E, one of the things, and you can attest to this, E, one of the things I always tell all of my clients, please call me if you have questions. And if my client calls me, I'm Johnny on the spot. If I'm not able to quickly answer the question, you know, in a quick phone call, I'll say, hey, let me get back to you and I'll follow up with you. But because I think this is a true passion of mine, that I want my people to be educated about the things that, you know, that they own, because I feel like if they can explain it to their friends about what it is that they own or the assets that they have, then if they can articulate that, then they may say, hey, you know what, you know this stuff really well, where did you get your information? And then hopefully that in turn leads to, you know, well, my financial advisor, you know, he explained this and that to me. And then, you know, the pay it forward type of thing just kind of continues to circle around, and word eventually gets out, and you know, your business grows from that.
I think one of the interesting things about money and financial literacy is not just that we don't ask questions. Some of the information is not easily accessible because, I don't want to say this politically correct,
just say it like it is,
other people hide it from us. They don't just come right out and say, I know E'll say this a different way, but we don't have the same outlets as other people. And so because Black people don't have the outlets that other people do, we don't have it as easy. Now, not saying you, just because it's not easy, I mean, you can't find it, because hard work can find anything if you really want it. But at the same time, there's so many of us out here, there's not, the outlets aren't as accessible as I would love them to be. Like, if it's business, it's a house, it's just not that easy to be like, oh, I can call this person. A lot of times you're like, well, who do I call?
Yeah, I think some of it is like pride too, because honestly, I've reached out. I have a situation right now, and I will not say my relative's name, but I called her 2 weeks ago and I was like, hey, what is your interest rate on your car? Because I helped another relative to basically cut their car payment in half as a result of refinancing and getting a lower interest rate. And I said, what is your loan? And she said, oh, I'll look for it, then I'll get back to you. I said, because what I want to help you do is to reduce your car payments so you can pay it off sooner, and then we're going to start focusing on your credit. Because I think I have 30-40 family members get together every Thanksgiving and Christmas. It makes no sense why we're not having financial literacy conversations, but that's a whole nother conversation. And she still hasn't got back to me. I called her this week. Hey, it's like, I want to give you the information. So I don't even know if that's really it, where it's access sometimes.
Priorities and values.
I tell a story. You know, I'm all real about my life. I don't have no issues bringing it up. But I had something happen recently in the past 2 months. Mm-hmm. And it hurt my heart because I know how hard it is to get here. So just to let you know, like y'all talk about priorities, missing a payment can hurt you so much more than I've never missed a payment before in my life. Mm-hmm. And life hits you sometimes. Sometimes you get busy. Yeah. I'm just saying, it happens. Mm-hmm. And I missed a credit card payment.
And do.
Yeah. You know, I paid it. I can't say I paid it late. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, oh, man, it's late. It's cool. You know, I ain't never paid it late. So end of the month came, and I got an email. And it's like, hey, James, your credit score dropped 68 points. The hell? 68 points for one late,
but it doesn't raise 68 points when you make it on time.
All right,
but people really know how bad 68 points can hurt you?
Because we in the Black community, we're not even trained to look for our credit score. I know that we can access that for free.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah. And now there's ways around it too, because you know I've had that happen before, where you know I had a little situation with a billing company and didn't realize that they had sent a bill. Mm-hmm. So when they sent it, I went ahead and paid it. but I saw my credit score dropped.
Mm-hmm. So like, what the world?
Yeah, but I saw that, but I did something about it too. I didn't just stop there and say, woe is me. I called a crediting company, explained the situation to them. I called the crediting agency. Mm-hmm. They told me what I needed to do. So I went those routes, sent the information to the crediting agency, and my score was back where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. So say all that to say, the information is out there. There's ways to fix these situations where, you know, we may not know the answers. Like, if you would have asked me before that happened, do I know how to handle that situation? I probably would have said no. But when it happened, I'm not just going to sit there and let shit get done to me. I'm going to control the situation. Yeah. So that's what we have to take accountability and have the initiative to do that. So,
right. And
go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say, man, you know, in those situations, don't just let them do you. Call them up, because these companies, they want to keep your business. So like in situations like you were proactive, E, and you did the correct thing in that situation, call the company up and just say, because that happened to me too before, Jamie, where, you know, it was a car that I don't even use. You know, it sits upstairs in my in one of my boxes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, crap, it was a payment that was due on this thing. And I forgot to pay it, and I was like 2 or 3 days late. Yep. And I called the company. I said, hey, look, this is the situation. I had never paid it late before. So they was like, I said, can you waive, you know, the late payment fee, and can you not report it as late? And they was like, yes. So even if we just call and ask the question, hey, can you waive the late fee, or can you waive, you know, this? I mean, because this was my first time that I ever did that. Just asking the simple questions can sometimes rectify a situation that we thought was worse than what we anticipated.
Absolutely. Because we spend so much time wallowing in the stench that we don't focus on how to get the stench off.
Yeah. That's right.
I think that goes back to what you were saying, E, about as far as like people challenging authority too, right? Like mm-hmm. It was important for me to encourage my daughter to ask questions, even if it was somebody that was older than her. Because if you have that mindset of, well, of course they know what they're doing, so I'm not going to ask the question, or they don't feel comfortable. So maybe it's a matter of like confidence building.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I got a question for the group here today. Do y'all really think people or yourselves know how money works?
Not 100%. I think there's always
your perspective, or for people in general.
I'm speaking like people in general, you know. And also, I mean, there are things that I don't know that I know that I can learn. Like because there's so much information out there, right? So I'm humble enough to know that there are things that I can learn, and I've learned things. But I just think there's always so much more. When you talk about things like compound interest, like investing and not having to work for your money, to some people, that's a whole foreign concept, because they've only been taught to go to work and get paid.
Right.
True.
Absolutely.
You know?
And when you remove yourself, I had this conversation with one of my clients yesterday, because, you know, he has his hands in a couple other ventures. And I told him, well, what happens when you remove yourself from that equation? What happens when you go on vacation or you get sick or whatever? Well, your money flow stops. So you have to figure out a way to basically replace yourself and create systems that create money for you versus you having to work for your money. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're typically not taught. We're taught to go out and work for our money.
Right.
So I
would say another thing that people don't understand is, you know, a lot of the information that we receive today, some of it is dated information. Like most people think the best place to save money, especially for retirement, is the 401k. It's not the best place to save money.
Right.
I mean, because essentially all you're doing is kicking the can down the road and giving the federal government. Let's just follow this example for a quick second, right? and let me know how many of you would sign up for this, you know. Or I typically give this conversation to my clients as it relates to over allocating to their 401ks. Not saying that the 401k is bad, but it's just not the best place to accumulate retirement savings. Now, here's why. Let's say we're contributing X amount of dollars to a retirement plan, and let's say that amount of money grows to $1 million by the time we retire. All right. Now, all the while, the way the 401k works is, you know, Uncle Sam allows us to accumulate all the earnings and all the growth on the money. And so it can compound on itself over time, over those 30 years. And we're not paying any taxes while the money is compounding on itself. However, when we go to get the money out, we're taxed on what Uncle Sam considers ordinary income tax rate. So basically, whatever tax rate you pay, that's how much in taxes you're going to have to pay. Long story short, we have this $1 million saved up. And let's say we're in a 20 or 30% tax bracket. We'll use 30%. If we put in, we got that $1 million, 30% of $1 million is $300,000. And we're going to net out of that $1 million, we're going to have realized $700,000 of the $1 million that we had accumulated for retirement. Now, in some instances, it would have been a better idea, rather than over allocating to the 401k, to put that money into a more tax favorable type of asset, like a Roth IRA. So I always ask my clients this question: if you had one pot of money that's going to be taxed and a pot of money that's not going to be taxed, which pot of money is going to last longer?
Yeah, and the one that's not taxed.
Right, the one that's not taxed. And so too many of us have followed old financial advice as to say, you know, max out the 401k at all costs. Well, that's not the best advice, because if you have a chance to put money in a pot of money, in an asset that's not going to be taxed in the future, why not do both? Why not contribute, you know, up to your company match to the 401k, then any dollar over and above that, reallocate it to another asset that's going to be more tax favorable for you. That, I know that doesn't probably make the best sense without a visual, but that's just a concept that I try and explain to my clients.
Right. And, you know, we completely understand, you know, we can't give the whole game on the podcast. You know, we're putting the information out here for hopefully the listeners to go out and research, you know, hit up Terry. Hey, let me get some more information about that. You know, ask the questions. We're just planting the seed so that you can grow a financial success tree. So right. Let me ask y'all this. What are some of the misconceptions that you all have been taught about money?
Well, one thing I was taught is...
Well, don't sound like you was taught anything.
Well, I said in my earlier years.
Oh, your earlier years, okay.
I still had to learn after I got out of college, you know.
True,
my
indeed.
Own time to come out here and learn. People think starting a business and being an entrepreneur is actually a business. It's not. Working for yourself is not a business. People think that, hey, and this goes to the money aspect. If I have my own, if I work for myself, that's a business. I'm making my money. But like you were saying a minute ago, yeah, I wanted to hit on that. If you're working and you're working for yourself, what happens when you leave work and you can't work?
Same thing that happens when you're working for somebody else.
Your money stops.
Right.
That's not a business. The definition of a business is something that can work without you being there, that can continue making you money. So
message.
Yeah.
So one of the things I learned, I know you remember, I had opened my shaved ice shop, and I was sitting, I'd be like, man, I got to be here every day. Rain, sleet, snow, sick, whatever. And he had put me up on this book, and was it Rich Dad, Poor Dad? Was that the one I read it in?
It might have been.
And it was just talking about how if you don't come to work, you don't get paid. And I was looking at it, and it was like, but if you have a business where you have people working for you, no matter what you do or where you're at, that system works continuously to continue making you money. So nobody ever taught me that. I had to learn the hard way. And that's those lumps in life you get. So that's probably one of the things that I learned, and was like, wow, money can continue making money for you. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to be in that particular place to make it.
Dude, it's like, I give you an example of a watermelon, right? One watermelon has probably a couple hundred seeds in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can take one watermelon and eat for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You take the seeds and reinvest it.
Yep.
You don't have to have all the resources available to you. You don't have to have several different endeavors. You can have one watermelon and live the rest of your life. You know, granted, you have to have the right conditions, soil conditions and all that. I'm not going that deep into it. But point being, you have a system in place that can regenerate itself over and over and over.
And build off of it.
And build off of it. Money is no different. Erica, what about you, sweetheart? What are some misconceptions about money that you've been told?
The big one for me was that I should not own a home.
Really?
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Who would say such a thing?
Yeah, it's people who have been renters all their lives. And the reasoning was that it's because of the expenses to keep the home up. Like, oh, if this breaks, then you're going to have to pay for it out of pocket. You know, like I just had my HVAC system replaced and it was a nice little piece of change. But the money that I've been able to put aside as the result of buying a property as a foreclosure and not having to pay you know, like, yeah, don't do that. But so the biggest thing for me was, yeah, like my family saying that I shouldn't be a homeowner, that I should just rent. But then I didn't like the idea of someone being able to increase my rent or my home payment, you know, whenever they felt like it. So to me, it made more sense to do the opposite. But that was something that was encouraged and pushed on me not to buy a home. Oh, yeah. I remember like a family member very close to me. I will not say who they are, but they told me, they said, you need to crawl before you walk. And I mean, a whole going off on me as to why I shouldn't buy a home.
Well, see, people are giving advice based off their perspective,
yes,
and their situation. Specifically with home ownership, there's factors to consider.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at your home as another financial tool, then by all means, because basically you got yours at a low cost.
Yes.
The value has appreciated, and now you have increased your net wealth.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing you have to look at when you're talking about home ownership. You know, you don't necessarily have to break the bank to live comfortably, but you look at the home as just another means to an end financially.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with home ownership from a personal perspective. There's nothing wrong with renting. It depends on how you are approaching those situations.
I agree.
100%. I look at owning a home like a better 401k to me. Because the way I look at it is like, okay, I put money into a 401k and I don't see that. I look on my bank statement and be like, oh, I got some money, but I can't touch it.
You can't touch it until later on down the road.
But my home, I put money in every month. I pay a mortgage. And as time goes by, in my situation, my home has increased in value to the point now people say to themselves, how do you get $50,000 per se? Well, I own a home and increased so much that I can sell it and I can pay the house off. And now I got that $50,000 to $100,000 in the bank.
Right.
But people always say, well, I see all these, you know, white Caucasian people that do it. And it's like, how do they do that? Well, this is what they do. The financial literacy that their parents taught them, they do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to kind of piggyback on that, and I'll make my point after this, is if you all have listened to Senator Cory Booker, he talks about how his family, the way that his father was able to obtain that home had provided for him the means to go to college, as well as the means for his father to invest and accumulate other properties as well. And so while we, you know, are taught the renter's mentality about, you know, home ownership or how to go about living or surviving, like Jamie said earlier, you know, on the other hand, our counterparts are taught, hey, let's buy this house. And as it does appreciate in value, we can use it as a piggy bank. Because the equity that's in that home, it doesn't just have to sit there. You can take $20,000 or $30,000 out of that home equity, and to now say, okay, I've always wanted to invest in real estate. Let me take this $30,000 out of my home, buy this foreclosed property, renovate it, and now I have the option to either sell it and recoup my money back off of it, and plus some profit, or I could just maintain this house that now I can now put a tenant in it and now collect monthly cash flow off of it.
That's why your family members don't want to rent. I mean, they want to buy it. They want to rent it. So
yeah. There's always a market for renters.
Hey, I'm doing the same thing right now.
Collect checks. That's it, man. So piggybacking on what we just said right there, we're talking about basically ways to make your money work for you instead of working for your money. So real estate, one of those examples. What are some other ways that we can make our money work for us instead of working for our money.
Invest.
In?
Oh, I don't know where to start.
Just give us a few examples, things that you invest in.
Well, okay. So a lot of people say stock, stuff like that. I invest in businesses. I invest in what I think that's going to change or that's going to make something happen. So if, for instance, if you come and say, man, I want to start this gym and I really believe in you, I'm like, well, look, let me see if I can put some money into it. We'll set up something. And that's an investment. I believe your investment should be stuff you believe in. A lot of people, even with stocks, a lot of people say, well, I want to buy Nike stock. Okay, that's cool. But why? Just because what? What is your reason? Like, for instance, I was telling a friend of mine in January, I said, hey, if you invest in stocks, one of the stocks you should buy is Disney. He was like, oh, really? Why is that? Well, I'm a tech nerd. So I'm like, well, they're about to start a streaming service in the end of the year. They have a lot of content. They're about to finish their acquisition with Fox. And lo and behold, last month, they went up 30%. And he made a grip off of it. But the thing is, I understood it. So if you invest in the things you understand instead of stuff you just hear, I'm investing in Amazon. Oh, but what do you know about it? Invest in the things you understand. That way you can make better moves.
And one of the things I'll piggyback on with that is, you know, a lot of times, like when I was first getting started out with investing, people would always say, well, invest in, you know, things you own, things you use, which is a good starting point, but it's more to the story than that. You have to look at the actual financial history and performance and profitability of the companies that you're looking to invest in. And going back to what you just said, Jay, you have to look at, well, what are the game changers in the industry right now that are going to be around long term? So a couple of things that I look at is anything in financial technology, i.e. Square, PayPal, you know, things like that, where we're doing more transactions from a mobile device versus physical cash registers and things like that. So anything that makes it convenient.
But E, that's the thing. People do this stuff every day. Like, if you could get yourself, like, one of the things I tell myself, and it may sound crazy, but I try to tell myself in my head, wherever you go, think about how you can start a business with it. So if people had the mentality of they go to the store, how'd you just pay for that? Square. Mm-hmm. You go to another store, just pay with Square. So you seeing there's a lot of people doing that. Why not just look into it? Well, shoot, everywhere I go, I got to pay with Square. Why not look more into it?
Mm-hmm. And you know what, though? So many people just kind of go about life, like you said earlier, Jamie, just existing and just surviving. They don't even – this is the problem with if you ever think about some of the smartest people that you know or the people that come up with the greatest ideas, it's typically people who have time to think.
Yes.
And people who have time to think are typically business owners.
Yep.
And so if you're just constantly in a rat race, just trying to survive, trying to keep your head above water, you don't even have the time or the notion to sit back and think, oh man, I just paid with this Apple Pay thing or this Square thing or Cash App. Mm-hmm. Let me research Cash App and see what it's about and see if it makes sense for me to maybe invest my money in it, if it might be the way of the future.
That's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So if you're in struggle, you're not even thinking about anything else.
No, you're just thinking, you're in survival mode.
Yes.
You're not thinking about how to increase your financial gain. You're just thinking about surviving, paycheck to paycheck. And that's the mentality that gets handed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, and you posed the question, what do you think someone should invest in? My thought is they should invest in themselves.
Absolutely.
Like their education, their financial education, because it was a real estate seminar, Rich Dad Poor Dad, that I went to that I learned about just the value of buying like an investment property. And that information has, I mean, goodness, the ROI on it has been substantial, not only just because of what I learned, but the people that I met and kind of the seed that it planted inside of me to want to learn more.
So just what she just said is one of the key things I'm living off of right now. Money is the root of everything that we live by.
Yeah, and the capitalistic economy that we live in, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the one thing people don't understand that's worth more than money is information.
Because
if you have the information, you can get the money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
People think that if you rob the bank, you get the cash. But what about the information that got you to rob the bank? Or the information that gets you to the money?
And on top of that, like if you ever listen to any of these people like Robert Kiyosaki or Tony Robbins, these people have like their mindset are so incredible as to like you can't break, you know, their train of thought. They're not going to get distracted by the minutia in life. And a lot of improving yourself has to, first, you have to start looking in the mirror and accept that, hey, I need to make some changes about myself. And so many of us, we never take that initial step to say, hey, how can I self-improve? How can I improve myself to better change my mindset about the way that I think about money, or how I'm going to raise my kids and their knowledge about money? If you never take those steps to enrich yourself with the knowledge, how can you, you know, pass information on to the next generation that's going to benefit them rather than hinder them and keep them in the same cycle of poverty?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And to piggyback on that, because we're coming up on time, so I just want to kind of do a round robin with two questions. What would you tell the next generation about money, about financial literacy, and what is a resource or resources that you would recommend to our listeners or anyone in the general public that can help them improve their financial literacy? So I'll start it off. One of the things that I would tell the next generation is focus on how you can improve your financial situation versus necessarily working for your money. How you can make your money work for you instead of always working for your money. Focus on your skill sets, things that you're good at, and how you can use that to increase your financial position or improve your financial position, because we all have skills. We all have skills. A lot of us don't necessarily recognize them, but we all have skills. Figure out how you can generate income. What can you do that somebody's going to pay for? What can you create that somebody's going to pay for? From a resource perspective, I would recommend the stock simulator on investopedia.com, because you can use that to simulate real-time trades in the stock market without using actual money. I think they start you off with like $100,000. So you can start simulating how to execute trades in the stock market before actually using your own money, so that by the time you get ready to physically invest your own money, you have the knowledge on how the game works. So that would be my two pieces of advice. What about you, Miss Lady?
So the first thing that comes to mind for me is that the saying that if you teach a man to fish, he'll eat like for the rest of his life. But if you teach a man to buy the land that the pond sits on, then you'll be able to change generations and leave a legacy. So I think, and the way you do that is through financial education, because you are going to transfer something to your child, to your family. It's either financial illiteracy or financial literacy. So in order to do that, my recommendation is to begin to read. If you don't like to read, there are plenty of YouTube videos. There's a book, it's Millionaire Mind, I think by T. Harv Eker, which is a really good one if you're just starting out and you just want to kind of just plant the seed. And then from there, you will find so many books, so many resources just from you exposing yourself to that information, and surround yourself with people who want the same thing, even if you have to be by yourself for a while.
What about you, Terry?
I would say a couple things. One, don't follow what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. Two, surround yourself with people that are going to make you become a better version of yourself. So, i.e., you know, if you're the smartest person in your crowd as it relates to personal finance, mm-hmm. you know, find five other people who are better than you. Mm-hmm. And that way you'll enrich yourself, and then in turn enrich your other circles around you. And as far as resources, I would say become a voracious reader. Mm-hmm. You know, seek out the content that you want to learn about and ask questions. That is so important. You know, my kids asking me questions all day long, and I don't care. You know, I have 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and 22-month-old twins. Mm-hmm. I don't care what the question is. If they ask me something and I can closely relate it to money or something like that, I'm giving them the information, because even though they're not necessarily processing it right now, it's going into the word bank, and it's also going into the, you know, the storage files to say daddy has mentioned this before. So when it comes up again, they know that, okay, daddy has mentioned this before, let me ask a deeper question now. So ask questions, become a voracious reader, seek out information is power, and become a better version of yourself.
Do you have any specific books, seminars, anything like that you would recommend for
man, it's some great content on YouTube. One of the books I always, talk to my clients about is The Millionaire Next Door. Mm-hmm. And the concept behind that book is, it's not about how much you make, it's about how much you keep. Mm. So, as simple as that sounds, too many of us are so focused on the material things in life. And, that again goes to don't follow up with the Joneses and try and follow everyone else.
Yeah, because they're broke.
Absolutely. The Joneses is trying to keep up with the next set of Joneses.
Yeah. That's right.
What about you, Jay?
I'm going to have to go off the one Terry took from me.
You got to think of something else now.
Yeah, the crew you hang with means a lot. And I was blessed with my brothers 10 years ago that I met, E, everybody else that made me fight hard to be like them and with them. And that's why I met to this day. So the people you are with, if they can't challenge you, then you're in the wrong group. Along with that, I would just say the more information, the better. Yeah. Because I'm telling you, the more you know, the more you can fight with and use for your better being. So to say about things, information, paths or something you can do, since I'm not an avid reader, like with books until now my homies have got me into reading and stuff. But if you're not, do magazines that have something to do with what you want. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, read Entrepreneur Magazine or, read Fortune. They actually have some great topics in there that you will find interesting enough to deal with you. So I would do that and keep up with current events, because the things that are happening today are changing how you get your money and how money's spent.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm still subscribed to Fortune 500 magazine to this day. To this day!
To this day! Message
to this day!
So there's one other resource that I just came across. Erica, I think I saw this on your page, the Entrepreneur Game.
Yes.
I haven't actually ordered it yet, but
getting it for my nephews.
You're getting it. I'm gonna get it too. It kind of looks in a good way. So it kind of looks like a Monopoly game, but from an entrepreneur standpoint. So I haven't actually researched it yet, but nonetheless, it looks solid and legit. So check it out on IG, the Entrepreneur Game.
Yeah, and it's black owned.
And it's back on. So, we always advocate for that anyway. So be sure to check that out. And Terry, I think that'll be big for you, for your kids and for your village. And I think the way the game is set up is for any age, whether a child, youth, or adult.
Yeah, game night.
Absolutely. The Entrepreneur Game. We're going to teach y'all how to get this money.
Your house game night?
That's right.
Hey, we might be able to make that work. Okay,
Let's make it pop. So we're going to get this thing popping, y'all. We're trying to encourage our culture on how to increase our financial acumen and build generational wealth instead of passing down generational debt and generational problems. So with that, as always, yes, we can and we will. Hey, one person at a time, baby. One person at a time. So hopefully y'all have gained something by listening to this. I must say, from all the podcasts that we've done, this is probably ranking as one of the most enlightening ones that we've had. I think so, from my perspective anyway.
I agree.
Yeah, so hopefully all the listeners have gained something from this when this episode drops. Nonetheless, this is Mr. No Excuses signing out with my man Jay. We always appreciate our guests for coming on. Miss Erica and my man Terry. My
gotta financial come back, Terry. Well. Gotta, I know it's the second time. We need you again, Terry. We always love it.
We need those jewels, man. The community needs it. The culture needs it. So we're going to keep having you on here, man. So anytime your schedule permits, you too, Miss Erica, anytime your schedule permits, we'll definitely be sure to have you on. This is the Hidden Truths Podcast. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share so you can catch all the latest and greatest episodes. All listening and all social media platforms, Hidden Truths Podcast. If you have any ideas for topics or if you ever want to be a guest for the show, be sure to drop us a DM or shoot us an email, thehiddentruthspodcast@gmail.com. As always, kings and queens, stay up, we out.